Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I know that you're all itching to know what happens in season two of My Name is Earl. And if that is the case, don't be listening to this podcast because we're going to be spoiling it. Lots of spoils. Of course, once you've watched, please come back and listen because we really need that listenership.
Peace.
Thank you.
I hate the word.
I got one leg is gonna fuck to this chicken.
Gonna put a little cornstarch on my werewolf, man.
Luigi Mario.
Hello and welcome to Mission Zach's Leguizamarama, a podcast where two old university friends get together once a week and watch one thing starring their favourite character actor, John Leguizamo. I am one of those hosts. My name is Zachary Ruane. You might know me from the Melbourne International Comedy Festival Superstar Gala, hosted by my comedy group Auntie Donna. A few weeks ago, televised recently. I don't know when this is going out. I'm joined, as always, by my formidable co-host, Miss Switchup.
who you might know from having two lines as a voiceover for Michelle Brazier's show at Melbourne International Comedy Festival called Average Bear, which might not sound like much, but it got me a pass.
Oh, that's fantastic. I encouraged Michelle to cut those lines, not because of Mish's performance, but because structurally I felt they were unnecessary.
Did you really?
But she cut them. No, I'm joking. I was just talking about at the... You actually said it. I just thought it would be funny to... I didn't actually tell her to cut the lines.
Thank you, God. No, that would have been fine. Like, let's be honest. I think, like, you would not know it was me.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like it's a career movie.
No, but imagine if someone went to her show, heard my voice.
Who's that?
Big, rich, famous people that can make me rich and famous.
That's not how it works.
I think it is. They come and they go, wow, who's that? And then someone, like from across the theatre, goes, that's Mish Witrup. She does a podcast.
So are they saying that in the middle of the show?
Yes.
That's not how it works.
It is. It definitely could happen. Do you not know that David Boreanaz is famous from Angel and Buffy, playing the role of Angel, was discovered eating lunch at a fucking Burger King?
Yeah, that happens.
Yeah.
But he wasn't – I doubt he was discovered by the casting director of Buffy. He was probably discovered by a model scout.
Or a manager.
You're a scout for
so
a manager.
I'm suggesting that a manager or a scout, a model scout, goes to Braz's show, hears my voice, went, reckon she's hot.
Okay.
And then they cast me as a model.
But then you got to work. You got to work because then you get your opportunities. You got to deliver every time. Do you think David Boreanaz has got that opportunity? Do you reckon someone walked up and said, hey, you're beautiful, you're having some lunch, you're beautiful, come on over, be in Buffy. No, they probably said, hey, you got something.
Yeah.
You got something, come to the office. And then he would have charmed him. Then they would have said, let's get some photos. Then he would have delivered. And then they would have said,
I can be charming, I can deliver.
Absolutely. I'm just saying there's not going to be someone that comes along, hears a line in Michelle Brazier's show, goes, who's that going to be? Maybe they'll say, who's that going to be? And then they're going to go, right, we're going to get you started by getting you an audition for Neighbours. But then you got to walk in the room and you've got to deliver.
I could deliver for Neighbours. I could deliver for Neighbours.
But what if instead of Neighbours, it's Joss Whedon and he's casting for Buffy?
Joss Whedon, would I want him to be my boss? Have you heard the stories?
Yeah, I've heard the stories.
I'm saying that with Neighbours, I think there's a good chance I could be cast because, let's be honest, Neighbours, a little behind the eight ball, but they're trying to diversify and they don't have a fatty house.
Like, are you proposing a whole house of fatties?
Yes, they need a house full of fatties. But like,
what about just
like Lizzo type fatties that are like hot.
Yeah, hot fatties.
Like hot fatties, like me. I'm a hot fatty.
Yeah, I'm not going to engage with this conversation on any level, but I am going to engage with the idea of a Hot Fatty House.
Yes.
So famously, Neighbours is a show that, you know, sometimes brings a family in. A new family has moved into the house that was once the Ramsey's house. That's how they'll introduce
characters. The Kevin Harrington family.
The Kevin Harrington family. Kevin Harrington was... Was he a family?
Yeah, he was the dad. He was Didge's dad. No, he wasn't. That was that other guy, Shane.
Not Shane Jacobson, Shane something.
Shane something.
He was Didge's dad. Was he Didge's? Yeah, and he was Lynn. No, that wasn't Didge. That was him and Lynn. He was...
Do you know?
Holly Valance. He was Holly Valance's dad.
Kevin Harrington was Holly Valance's
dad. No.
Shane
was Holly Valance's dad.
Which would have
Shane
also have...
and Lynn were Holly Valance and the other one's dad.
Yeah, and then Didge's dad was Kevin Harrington. Didge was a dad. No.
So you're saying Kevin Harrington was not Lou, the other one, Harold's son.
Yep.
So you have to be a fan of John Leguizamo and on top of Neighbours in the 2000s to enjoy this podcast.
So I have a friend. Mm-hmm. A very good friend who is obsessed with Neighbours.
Okay.
I think he wouldn't mind me saying his name. His name is David.
Okay.
I'm going to message him right now and say, who was Didge's dad? But, and by the end of this episode.
But the reason why I'm incredulous right now, the reason why I'm thrown by all of this is I don't think of Kevin Harrington's character as a father. I think of him as a son because he's Harold's son. So
yeah, so who was Harold's grandkids?
I don't think Didge... was Harold's granddaughter. That's what I'm struggling with.
I think it's Didge.
Well, can you also ask, and who was her grandfather?
Yeah.
Because that's what's key here. If I had known Didge was part of that lineage,
yeah,
I would have had very different feelings about Didge.
Okay.
No, I wouldn't have. I had great feelings towards Didge.
Yeah, I thought Didge was great. Didge died... after childbirth, right? Didge either died after childbirth or died. No, she died after childbirth, but almost died in a forest.
Wow.
Yeah.
Looking up Didge now.
No, but don't, because then you'll find out the answer, and I want to get it from David.
No, I know. I won't. I won't say anything. Didge, played by Eloise Mignon.
Mm-hmm. We love Didge.
Who is Eloise Mignon, is theatre royalty. Her parents, like, started a theatre company.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Fun fact, I had a big crush on Didge.
I know that.
Loved Didge. If you're listening, Eloise Mignon, too late. I'm taken.
Zach is spoken for now, Didge.
I'm spoken for now, Didge.
Okay, David's replied.
Oh, my God. What did he say?
Steve was her dad. She was adopted.
Who played Steve, though? Ask him who played Steve.
Who
I'll look up Steve.
Played Jim Parker was her grandfather.
Yeah, so
who's Jim Parker?
It's not Harold, is the point. So I'll accept my apology with a side of fries.
Who was Harold's grandkids?
Who is Harold? Not certainly not Didge.
This is amazing. I think it's absolutely like David, for all accounts, is the coolest dude. Like he's just fucking cool. He's like writes music reviews. He has a couple of podcasts. He's got a real thing for like Aussie live music. He's a fucking legend and he loves Neighbours. And I respect that so highly.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
It's kind of like my thing for Survivor.
I think
that. But my thing's less cool.
I think that Neighbours, I actually have a great segue from Neighbours.
Mm-hmm.
To our topic today.
Cool.
Would you like to hear it?
Just so you know, the person who played Steve was Steve Bastoni.
Okay.
This David, of course, told me that. And I'm showing Zach a picture now.
Ah, yes.
That's Didge's dad.
Yes.
That is Didge's dad. All right, anyway, enough.
I think I saw him in like a Joanna Murray Smith play once that was just like, you know, just upper middle class people troubles. You know those shows where it's just they love them at Melbourne Theatre Company where it's just like, you know, I don't know what to do. My God, what are you doing here? And then you go and have a glass of wine at intermission.
Yeah.
Well, the party's here, but where's the rest of the family? Oh, you're all here. Oh, my God. Oh, why can't we just get along? Oh, yeah, very good, very good.
I'm not too far outside of theatre yet for that to not, that's not that weird.
Like, oh, darl.
Yeah.
It just plays, just like, if you're not from, Joanna Murray Smith's a great writer.
Great writer.
There was a bit of a, but if you're not from Australia, if not from the Australian theatre scene, there was a play called Summer of the 17th Doll.
Oh, God.
From maybe 70 years ago.
Yeah.
And everything, main stage theatre for the last 70 years has just been trying to reclaim the glory of Summer of the 17th Doll.
Oh, God. I think every 1-2 theatre studies student studied Summer of the 17th Doll.
Ah, what are you doing here?
Here, wait, I'll read a direct quote if you'd like from Summer of the 17th Doll. If I can find a good one.
Summer of the 17th Doll is about like barley farmers or something living in the Carlton townhouses, which back then were gross and small and for poor people.
Yeah, that's it.
So
a quote from Summer of the 17th Doll, for example, is, "But the ordinary bloke's got a way out, he does. He can get married. There's always been a sort of reason why I could never do such a thing."
So, also on
you know,
that,
it's a funny thing, all the women, spelled W-A-M-M-E-N, I've ever knocked around with, there's never been one of them ever knitted anything for me. Now, what do you reckon that is?
I should also say, Joanna Murray Smith does a lot of plays about, like, upper middle class people, right, which I actually don't mind. It's upper middle class people go and watch their plays about upper middle class people dramas and they go, very good, very good, I see myself up there.
Yeah. Clap, clap, clap.
But there's also a vein, I quite like that, there is also a vein in Australian theatre of like, what is it to be Australian and what of the poor people? And there's a lot of theatre that's just like, I wrote a play about poor people living in commission homes and being violent to their women. I've written a hard-hitting play from the perspective of poor people.
Mm.
And then it's like handsome young NIDA graduates just before they jaunt off to Los Angeles playing poor people.
Yeah.
You know, it's very odd.
There's always a scene where they're yelling at someone in their family.
Why don't you get out of here, Marjorie?
Yeah.
Like that sort of thing.
Yeah. Or like a young son in his early to mid-20s who's just... his parents never understood him. And
yes.
So he says stuff like, you never understood me, you never did. I tried, Mum. I tried for years. I said to you I'd be going north and you didn't even listen. You didn't listen, Mum. Like that kind of stuff.
And you best believe if one of them masculine men is a bit homophobic, oh, he's coming out by the end of that show.
Yeah.
It's because I'm gay.
Yeah.
I'm a homophobe because I'm a gay man. It's like, okay, very – maybe he's just rotten.
Yeah.
Or maybe maybe it's just like it's very – it's funny. It's a very funny thing of just like a lot of – I was like, why do they do that? it's like writing a play about why do the poor people do that? And I wanted to explore. I've never met a poor person. My father was a novelist, and my mother worked as an architect. But
I will say this though, the local butcher, he doesn't seem rich, but he's very nice.
He's very nice, and
he's from Vietnam.
So I went to St. Kevin's, and that's where I discovered my love of theatre. Mm. And every day on the way home to work, to school, I used to catch the train home to school from school, and sometimes there were poor people on that train. And I thought it was a great equaliser. when I got the artistic directorship of the Melbourne Theatre Company, I thought, well, you know, we're talking about middle-class people and middle-class issues, and I thought, What about the poor people?
I don't think enough credit is given to them. So myself and my partner Joshua.
Ah, yes, Joshua.
We took a cruise last year.
Yes.
And it was through the islands. And at one point we stopped over in Samoa for a lunch.
Yes.
Oh, I tell you what, that village.
Can I say?
Yes.
Your play. Mm. Your play that Joshua directed.
Ah, yes.
I saw it in Sydney when I was in Sydney.
Which one is directed four of my shows?
No, well, the one about the complexity about with the entirely white cast living in, you know, going on the cruise and seeing the poor people in Samoa.
Oh, yes. That's the play I called Samoa.
I certainly questioned my own privilege when I saw the show. I remember saying to my partner, I said, well, darling, maybe we are as privileged as those characters. Mm. You know, I thought long and hard about that.
It's like you've got it. You know, Yes. You understand it. I tell you what, after I took that trip to Samoa and I saw that small village for the 65 minutes we were allowed to be there.
Yes.
It changed Joshua and my life completely. Since then, every year we give an undisclosed amount to Samoa. Like undisclosed because it's tacky to talk about money. But we give them a bit.
Yes. Yes. Well, I did a play about poor people.
I saw it.
And we did interviews with poor people and we wrote monologues about the poor people, but from their perspective.
That, like the Laramie Project.
Yes, but we wrote the monologues based on some interviews that we did.
Well, you couldn't go word for word because some of them have awful vocabulary.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Some of you couldn't do a verbatim piece.
Well, no, not at all. Also, verbatim, I think it's a little modern, it's a little much. No, we wrote the monologues about the people, but it was from the perspective of the people and you know, but yes, I could hardly understand them though. Yeah, and this and like. So we had to obviously cut a lot of that.
Of course.
We wrote them, you know, but it was trying to find their perspective. Maybe they're sexist towards women because, you know, they don't understand.
Yeah.
Or maybe they're homophobic because they themselves are gay, because they don't understand, you know. And we were trying to find that in the characters. It was very powerful work. Mm. And we even tried to do some, sell some cheap tickets at the front of the theatre, you know, for underprivileged youth so they could see themselves on the stage.
I believe that you've started something there and that more theatres should offer up more poor people tickets.
Oh, no, we had to stop that. They were being far too disruptive.
Yeah, of course.
They didn't understand. I they were talking and they were the children, they were so rude.
Nothing makes me madder than people who don't know how to watch theatre.
Absolutely. And
Theatre etiquette. I'm not asking you to not put your elbows on the table, dear. I'm not asking you to not swear in your own time. I'm asking you to have a bit of theatre etiquette.
I mean,
etiquette.
We're trying to make some theatre about you, for you.
Yeah.
And
don't be selfish.
I wrote one email to a principal of the school and I said, you know, if you're going to... It was just awful. Mm. They were talking the entire way through it. They were laughing at some of the parts that I had decided weren't
the
funny.
The sexual parts?
Well, yes, and the sexual parts. And there was, you know, quite confronting language, you know. And and they were just laughing at it.
I remember
and
that.
And I was like, I didn't decide that was funny when I directed the show, so you shouldn't be laughing. Mm.
Like that part in your most recent play where Lysander speaks of Elizabeth's supple breast.
Ah, yes, yes.
It's a beautiful monologue about femininity.
Yes.
Spoken by a man.
Yes.
They laughed for hours like they'd never heard the word bosom.
Well, I said, you know, we were working on that production and I was in a meeting in the morning. We were putting together the next year's shows, and let me tell you, some exciting stuff. All I'm going to say is David Williamson's back.
Oh,
Oh. But that's all, you know.
I am shaking. Oh. I'm so. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to remove this giant serrated knife from up my bottom.
Yes.
Because I hate myself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely wonderful. And I got into the theater, into the rehearsal room for an hour or so. I had to step out to talk to the major sponsor, Mitsubishi.
Yeah.
They were sending a representative, and I had to talk to them, you know, the schmoozing that you have to do.
Networking.
So I stepped into the rehearsal room for an hour, and the assistant director sort of presented a bit of a piece, and I said, it's fun. You know, you're talking about bosoms. Mm. I think this might be funny. And they said, oh, I don't know about that. And I said, no, try it funny. And they did, and we decided to keep it like that. And yes, well, I will just say, you know, the same fucking people that go to the same fucking shows every fucking time, they all fucking seem to like it.
Well, that's really lovely for you.
Anyway, that was a good bit.
I like that.
Do you want to keep doing it? Do you want to
do
a bit more?
No, I'm well
bit?
Done. I was done when I said the whole knife thing up my ass.
Yeah. No, that's fair. So I got two segues. Do you want me to just do both?
Yeah, man.
So the segue when we were doing Neighbours was going to be...
By the way, Sky and Summer, Harold's grandkids.
Actually, I'll tell you the Neighbours segue later.
Sorry, Sky and Serena.
Sky, Harold.
Harold's grandkids.
There you go. Sky. She had a music career for a short time, did Holly Valance. So what was I going to say about, the segue?
Mm-hmm.
Well, talking about stories about poor people that I'm not entirely sure were written by and for them.
Mm-hmm.
My name is Earl.
That's a good segue.
Thank you.
Do you have a second segue?
No, I'm going to save it.
Okay.
Because I've realised I've got a funny joke in my blurb that would ruin.
Okay.
All right. This week, we watched episode 10 and episode 11 of season 2 of My Name is Earl. Episode 11 is the story of Earl, played by Jason Lee, and his stupid brother, played by a guy I thought I was in more stuff, and then I Googled him and he wasn't, as they go down to Mexico to save a girl who got sent there. Meanwhile, Jamie Presley takes some time off being bitter about Margot Robbie stealing her career to do a B-plot about taking pills that make her less angry. John plays Diego, a bandit from Mexico who loves America but has not received any information about it since 1988, so thinks America's president is Senor Reagan and shit like that. Episode 10 does not feature John Leguizamo. Michelle told me to watch episode 10, and I watched the whole thing. And then there was a guy that I saw the back of a head of a man, and I thought, maybe that's John Leguizamo. Only later realizing that was John Leguizamo's assistant. I called Michelle and said, hey, have you watched episode 10 yet? And she said, yeah, John Leguizamo's not in it.
I'm really sorry. I got very confused because... IMDb says he's in two episodes.
Yeah.
But then any information about it just says episode 11. Now, it's an understandable confusion, IMDb, because episode 11 is part 2 and episode 10 is part 1 of an episode called Crossing the Border or something.
Crossing the Border part uno.
Yeah.
Crossing the Border part due. I don't know Spanish.
Yeah, neither do I. So did you sit through episode 10 as well?
I did, Mish, because thank you so much for all of the work you do behind the scenes. I'm forever grateful. Mish sourced it, found out which episode to watch, told me to watch episode 11, and then last night said, oh, you also have to watch episode 10. It's 10 and 11. And I said, thanks, Mish. Then the next day, sat down. This was this morning. Sat down. I was like, geez, I wish it was only one episode. I only really have half an hour to watch that. But that's okay. I'll watch the one episode now on the train and then the other episode I'll watch on my lunch break rather be socialising, talking to people. That's fine. So then I watched all of episode 1 and I sent Mish a message saying, Mish, hey, have you seen episode 10 yet? Because what I was going to do if she said, no, I haven't, I was going to say, oh, don't bother, just watch episode 11. But she said, yes, he's not in it. And I thought to myself, wow, I wonder what happened between Mish telling me to watch episode 10 Did you watch it after you told me to watch it?
Yes.
Yeah. And then you didn't think, and after you watched it, to go, hey, Zach, he's not in debt.
No, because when you messaged me about it, I just finished watching.
Ah, did you watch it this morning?
No.
No, I messaged you this morning.
Oh, did you?
Yes, fuck. I did.
I'm really sorry.
I don't care.
I'm really sorry.
Let's be honest.
Like, it's nice to watch an episode of something that only goes for 22 minutes, especially when it's something like My Name Is Earl. Imagine if I'd said you have to commit to an hour episode of something.
I got to tell you, I was so excited when I was like, oh, good, we only have to watch 22 minutes of something.
Mm.
Finally, you know, I got a lot to do. Finally, I only have to watch 22 minutes of something. And then I watched 22 minutes of episode 10 and I thought, he's not in that. I know Mish is busy, like I'm busy, we're both busy people. I'll just shoot her a message, tell him he's not in episode 10.
I'm so sorry.
I'm actually not bitter at all. I also said to Mish before we went in, I'm going to like go you about something, but I'm not actually bitter because I'm not bitter because I love watching.
Well, no, in fairness, it gave episode 11 a little bit of context.
That's true.
But so does the voiceover at the start of episode.
Yeah, in fairness, so does the previously on My Name Is Earl that explains everything that happens in episode 10.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Is John Leguizamo in episode 10?
No.
Because he's not.
Have you ever watched My Name Is Earl before?
Fun fact about me and My Name Is Earl. When My Name Is Earl came out in like 2005-ish, I was a big Kevin Smith fan. Still like Kevin Smith, but I was a big fan then. So I really liked Jason Lee because I really liked Kevin Smith. And I thought, oh, cool.
Is he in a lot of Kevin Smith stuff?
Yeah.
Because I know Jason Lee from Almost Famous.
Is he in Almost Famous?
Yes.
Who is he in Almost Famous?
The lead singer.
Is he?
Yes. And I haven't seen Almost Famous in a really long time.
Clearly me neither.
But I really liked that movie because I thought it made me interesting to like that film.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
I bet you saw a little bit of yourself in What's Her Name.
Yes, of course I did. In Penny Lane.
I think it would be very fun for you to write a comedic character or something about all of the female characters you liked circa 2004.
I don't know if a lot of people could relate to it. Do you think they could?
Everybody
my age.
Every girl your age would relate and thereabouts.
That being said, though, I do think
something about Girl Interrupted and Penny Lane from Almost Famous.
There would be others as well, for sure. I think, like, you know, adding on to our Miriam Margolyes, adding on to our Whoopi Goldbergathon, whatever, Frances McDormand would be a great one.
Oh, yeah.
She's also in Almost Famous. She's the mum. And she's excellent.
So he's anyway, in have you ever Mallrats, Chasing Amy, Dogma, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, Jersey Girl, Clerks 2, and Cop Out.
Oh, okay.
Famously Cop Out.
I don't think I've seen much Kevin Smith as you read that list.
I haven't in a long time. Dogma, very important film for me, but I haven't seen it in recently enough to be able to like give it a full-throated enthusiastic endorsement, but a very important film for me as a young Catholic at the time.
Mm.
It sent me on the path to agnosticism and then atheism. Not in the way that people worry. It wasn't because it put ideas in my head. It just put language to the ideas that I was already having.
I love that Kevin Smith helped you become an atheist.
Oh, I imagine he helped a lot of nerdy boys become atheists. That film is very much like about religion. And I think came out in like 97. And right now, I don't know if you know much. Have you seen much about the Lil Nas X stuff that's going on at the moment?
Little is that that gonna take my horse to?
Oh, wow. You don't know. Yes.
No, I don't know what's going
on.
Oh,
he is. You know, he is. He is.
What's happened? Tell me.
He's doing.
I've been working. So just for a bit of clarity.
Busy girl.
I've been very, very busy the last fortnight.
Yeah, no.
In particular. So I have missed all the Little Nas X. Is it the same guy?
So what he's been doing is he made a very provocative music video.
Is this the horse one?
No. The horse one was last year, darling. Oh no, I'm still in my director character.
No, that's one of those songs that it was so bad.
Like, no, oh really? No, I thought it was fantastic.
No, I hate that song.
Oh, I like it.
And one of those songs I don't understand how it got famous.
Oh, I could tell you. TikTok.
Yeah.
So TikTok. He's basically done Like a Prayer, and he's done Like a Prayer. His latest music video is Like a Prayer. And trying to think of other examples. And like WAP or Anaconda and something really like a huge step forward for LGBT representation as well. Like what's something that did that?
Oh, God. Troye Sivan comes to my
yeah,
head.
Yeah, but yeah. It's kind of that's where it's at its most. Like, it's never been. But basically, it's the first time I've ever seen this. He's putting LGBT queer sexuality in a music video in a way that's usually only ever straight sexuality. It's very, very provocative.
Why is that a problem?
It's not a problem at all.
Oh, I thought he'd like created some sort of problem.
He lap dances on the devil.
Cute.
It is. It's great. And now he is just on fire on Twitter. He's just like trolling every single conservative. It's like, it's very like a virgin. It's like a virgin, not like a virgin. Like a virgin. It's just like the old 90s playbook of upsetting Catholics. It's dogma. It's like a virgin. It's like, I thought that type of thing was over, but it's not.
Oh my
and
God,
he
that's
is
great.
Like, he is just so funny. He's so, so funny. Anyway, that's what's happening on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And this was that then. Dogma was okay. That. Like, Catholics were so upset about dogma. They were so upset. They were like, God isn't a woman, but God is played by a woman
in
this movie.
Is that Alanis Morissette?
Yes.
So cool.
And then you watch the movie and they're like, God has no form. God is neither male nor female, but in this movie, God will appear in the form of Alanis Morissette. And that's really fun, right?
I love that.
But then the Catholics were like, God isn't a woman. It's a great film. I loved it.
That's great.
Anyway, I love Jason Lee.
Just a very quick gripe on Alanis Morissette.
Okay,
great. I hate that I have a gripe. I fucking love Alanis Morissette.
Just, I want to give you a heads up. I know Alanis Morissette. I don't. I lied.
Oh, my God. I just fucking weed.
I've never met Alanis Morissette in my life.
Fuck, no, because this isn't really a gripe. No, this isn't a gripe. I remove the fact it's not a gripe.
It's
a question that I put to Alanis Morissette.
You're allowed to say,
this one goes out to you, Alanis.
I'm sorry about the Gretel thing. You can take a swipe at Alanis Morissette.
No, this isn't, because I actually love her. Like, I love Alanis Morissette. I love her music. I actually love her new album, even though it's not doing as well as I think it should. I thought it was great. And Jagged Little Pill is fucking iconic. Alanis, I nearly called her Janice. Alanis Morissette unschools her children. She's very open about it. She talks about it in interviews and stuff. I'm very confused by what that is. It sounds insane.
What is? Oh my God.
So the concept of unschooling is where it's the children choose what it is that they want to learn. So you teach them what they want to do. So if you're like, let's do math, and they go, fuck off. The parents go, no worries, what would you like to do? And they go, watch TV. And they're like, great, you can watch cartoons. But then they might be like, oh, do you want to cook something with mum or dad? And the kid's like, fuck off. And they're like, okay, what do you want to do? And they're like, throw stones at a tree. They're like, great, you can go do that then. It's time for bed, dear, it's 9 o'clock. Fuck off. Okay, you stay up till when you want. It's like you let your children choose how they want to be taught.
Okay.
But I might have gotten that wrong, although I do – a friend of mine
it
from
sounds
way
like
back
you,
when
– I don't know anything about unschooling.
Mm-hmm.
Anything. This is the first time I've heard of it. Yeah. This is literally the first time I've ever heard of this concept in my life.
Mm-hmm.
The only information I have about unschooling is what you just told me.
Yep.
And even with that knowledge base, mm-hmm. I think you're getting it wrong.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. So it's like, am I getting this wrong? If anyone out there knows a bit more about unschooling, please feel free to DM us. But I heard her mention it in a interview.
Mm.
And then I looked it up a little. I think I wiki paged it or something. Mm. And I was like, that sounds mental. So if someone could please...
I definitely saw a thing once on 60 Minutes about ladies that let their children pee in the garden. They don't nappy them.
Dude, we know somebody who lets their kid piss in the yard.
Well, I can't wait for you to tell me in about 10 minutes who that is.
I will tell you. We should talk about My Name Is Earl.
So that's what I was going to say. I was a big Jason Lee fan. So when it was on the telly, I heard, I was like, oh, great. Jason Lee is doing a television sitcom.
Mm.
And that was before I realized that actors do jobs. And just because he was in one thing doesn't mean he was like, you know what I mean? Like actors have less power than I think people think.
Yeah.
And I watched a few episodes and it wasn't really for me. It was a bit, it just wasn't super for me. And I didn't watch many more episodes.
Fair enough. I'd never seen My Name Is Earl. So I didn't know the premise of the show. Mm-hmm. I didn't know who was in it. I didn't know the characters. I know that Jason Lee's brother is the dude from Remember the Titans.
Oh, yeah. I did not do a good enough Google search.
I'm pretty sure he's also the dude from...
He's in everything.
He's in The Butterfly Effect.
Oh, I didn't care for that film.
Yeah, me neither, actually. We should talk about that sometime.
Yeah.
That guy would actually be a great guy. What's his name?
Kutcher?
No, the guy who...
Ashton Kutcher?
The guy who plays Jason Lee's brother in My Name Is Earl.
I don't know.
Well, yeah, that's we should do a podcast
about Ashton Kutcher.
Not about Ashton Kutcher.
Why would we do a podcast about Ashton Kutcher?
Do you think if we did, anyone would listen?
About Ashton Kutcher?
That's what I want. What a shit fucking person.
Do you remember when Ashton Kutcher, if you're listening, sorry, dude. Do you remember when Kutcher played?
I love your wife. I think your wife is funny.
Yeah, and you seem like a good guy, Kutch.
I've got no problems with you,
Can Kutch. I call you Kutch?
I've got no problems with you, Kutch, but no offense, it never occurred to me to make a podcast about you ever.
Yeah, I mean, like, we did a podcast about Leguizamo. Do you remember when Kutcher played Steve Jobs in the...
I never saw it.
No, I saw the good one. So Kutcher played Steve Jobs. About a year before the movie Steve Jobs came out, Kutcher was in a film called Jobs.
Jobs.
And it was like... It was like, how good is Steve Jobs? He started in a garage and then he made the iPod. And that's my impression of the movie. And then Steve Jobs, the movie, is like, oh, complex, bit of a prick, you know, like much more interesting.
Who plays Steve Jobs in that one?
Michael, the guy from 12 Years a Slave. I always forget. Fassbender. He's very good.
He's very hot.
And it's also directed by Danny Boyle, who's one of my favourite directors.
Oh, yeah, cute.
I love the film Steve Jobs. I love it. I love it. I love it. I think it's better than Social Network.
Is there anyone in the movie Steve Jobs that is in My Name Is Earl? Can we bring it back?
No, connect but... It?
Yeah?
But the mother of Steve Jobs' illegitimate child plays the teenage girl who has the illicit affair with John Leguizamo in Babysitters.
Oh, Zach! Oh, that was fucking beautiful.
It's true. I mean, the whole time I was watching that movie, I'm like, what's she off? And then I was like, oh, Steve Jobs. She's very good in it.
I think
only in like two scenes, but
my,
very good.
My theory on the show My Name Is Earl is it doesn't have a strong enough premise. You know how you were saying your favourite horror movies are the ones that have like, that are character-led? Was this you saying that?
No. I said the best horror movies are metaphor.
Okay, wrong. Anyway, my point is I think that they were like, oh, we'll make this a character-led comedy and we'll just give it a real baseline plot, right? Which is like, great. But they didn't give it enough because the premise I think essentially is that Earl was a cunt.
Yeah.
Tell me if I'm wrong on this because literally I've watched two episodes of this show in my life in the middle of season two.
Mm-hmm.
That Earl was a cunt. Earl wins a lot of money with a lottery ticket, loses the lottery ticket, and then goes, well, I'm going to spend the rest of my life undoing my bad deeds and because he discovers karma.
Yeah, he discovers.
So he tries to be karma. To be a good boy.
Yeah, and I think that's most of season one.
Mm.
I did a bit of Googling. I think season one is that, and then it just becomes characters going on adventures. Mm. Every now and then he talks about the list.
Yeah.
US sitcoms are about volume, I think. They're about, like, set up some characters and just have them do things for as long as possible until someone cancels us.
Yeah.
Like, that's really the thing. And then
like, was My Name is Earl a popular show?
Yeah. It was fine. It was like...
Would it have been nominated?
Yeah, he got nominated for the Emmy twice.
Did he win?
Don't think so. I think it was in that realm. You know, like it wasn't... I'm trying to think of what the modern equivalent of My Name is Earl would be. Happens less, though, because it came from an era...
Oh, where they loved it. Malcolm in the Middle is a perfect example.
Like it was, you know, there was HBO...
Two girls, a guy in a pizza shop or whatever it is.
Yeah, it was HBO.
Mm-hmm.
There was HBO, there was Showtime, there was AMC when that show came out. Like there was... A bit of prestige television. Mm-hmm. It was post Twin Peaks and post, well, Twin Peaks was network. It was post those shows, right? But it was also pre, like, Netflix.
Yeah, I getcha.
So, like, there wasn't, like, particularly sitcoms. I don't think, like, I think it was fine. I think it was like a Malcolm in the Middle.
Mm.
You know, that's where I would think I would place it.
Yeah.
Like, it certainly wasn't a... Arrested Development.
Like I used to watch Malcolm in the Middle when I was younger, but I remember not being pissed off if I missed an episode. Do you know what I mean? Like it wasn't like I had to watch every episode of Malcolm in the Middle.
So this show's like I would say Arrested Development or like The Simpsons or like I thought of something else that was of that era that was just like really really good. Anyway, it wasn't that.
Mm.
It's just a show that was on.
Did you enjoy the episodes you had to watch?
Did I enjoy the episodes of My Name is Earl?
Yeah.
We made an agreement, you and I, after the first two podcasts we did, like the first three where we were just like, let's not look at that through the lens of now because then we will spend the whole time talking about how offensive it was.
Yeah.
So that's the agreement we made.
Yes. Cool.
Yeah. So what I found, it's 2006 or whatever. It's very. I've not been to Mexico, so maybe Mexico is like that.
Mm.
I would be surprised though, because there's like big cities and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Like it's very. It felt. Can I say one interesting thing about Mexico? So this is about, like, the Westerns and stuff. I don't know a lot about this, but do you know the Dollars trilogy, the Clint Eastwood, Few Dollars More, Good, the Bad and the Ugly is the most famous one. Fistful of Dollars, A Few Dollars More and the Good, Bad and the Ugly. They're Italian. They're Italian films. Did you know this?
I had no idea.
So they're
The Good, the Bad and the Ugly is an Italian film?
It is. It's directed by a man named Sergio Leone. Like, this is very bait. Like, there's film nerds listening now, like, yeah, we know, Zach, shut up, stop mansplaining. But it's, you know, if you don't know that, it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people know that, but Mish doesn't. Let me explain to Mish. Stop going at me, guys.
Come on. Stop being so fucking rude to
this
Zach.
This is her opportunity to learn.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's an Italian filmmaker. And basically, the way those films worked was they were making these sort of kind of trashy films. They were making these big epic, like I think it was in vogue to make big like gladiator movies in Italy. And then in the 70s, this guy, Sergio Leone, started making Westerns. And essentially, Westerns were a really big genre in America in like the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
They'd sort of gone out of vogue. And then this Italian dude started making these Western movies in Italian largely. I think they filmed either in Spain and they were like, they wanted the big name actors. They couldn't get them. Clint Eastwood at the time was just a TV actor, which back then was really like not great.
On what show?
Oh, it's some cowboy show.
Oh, cool.
So he was a bit whatever. And they were like, we can't get the big famous guys. We'll take Clint Eastwood. Clint Eastwood flew to Italy, did the movies was like, these are whatever movies. It was a thing that there was a lot of trashy Italian crappy movies that were kind of Westerns. Every actor spoke in their own language. So you'd have Clint Eastwood going, get out of here. And then an Italian dude would be like, buongiorno. And then they would just dub it for each market. They got everyone to act in their own language and then they just dubbed it in Italian.
That's so interesting.
And then, and the whole thing was, it was like the way, the way people would go and make movies in, like ads in Japan.
Yeah.
Would just like Clint Eastwood was this TV actor. For a bit of money, he went to Italy. He made this movie for Italy and was like, I'll never see that movie. No one will ever see that movie. And then it was so good that they dubbed it in English and it did well. And then I think they offered him the second one, which isn't technically a sequel. He's technically a different character, but it's so similar. And he was like, oh, well, he'd never seen the film. They like sent him a reel. He watched it in Italian. He's like, yeah, that's pretty good. I'll do the second one. Then he did the third and then they like started releasing them in America. What's interesting though is it's an Italian guy that I don't know if he'd ever been to America. He created his own version of America. He created this gritty, real idea of America, of Mexico, of like that border of America, based on films he'd seen, but also like based on his own imagination. Most of the Mexicans are played by Italians and Spanish people. He's like, he created this idea of America. So what I find very interesting is this gritty, realistic notion of what the West was, of what like of what Mexico is. It was like essentially created by an Italian dude in Italy.
That's fucking
in the 70s.
Look at you with your big brain.
That's not.
It's just a cool thing to hold on to.
The notion that like what we think of as gritty, real was almost entirely created by an Italian man from watching American movies. It's its own cultural conversation. And then I feel like this movie, there are points in My Name is Earl where it's like, it feels like people that have never been to Mexico, even though it's like an hour's drive away. Yeah. And they're basing their idea of Mexico on an Italian man from 40 years ago.
That's so funny.
It's like it feels like it's part of this. It's like I think they must have filmed. They definitely filmed, did not go to Mexico to film it. It's fascinating. It's fascinating.
I love that so much.
It just feels like – it feels very like it's like, oh, this is on a back lot.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. Fascinating times. You wouldn't do it now.
Oh, no. God, no. No. Like, you'd think that there'd be someone on the team, just someone who'd be like, excuse me. I've been there. It's not like that.
But it's almost like I think it's knowing. I think it's ironic. But also, 2007, it was a lifetime ago now, man.
did you think that John Leguizamo was good in it?
Yeah.
Always. Do you know what I love about John?
He's not Mexican.
No, he's not Mexican.
He's Puerto Rican.
Yeah. Do you know what I love about John?
Oh, my goodness.
This is slightly more trivial, but he always wears a red leather jacket.
He loves it.
Putting him in a red, probably pleather jacket. And yet here we see it again. I would love to make some form of collage of John Leguizamo in red jacket because he loves to wear a red jacket. Or like a jacket with a red feature, in Land of the Dead where he had the red stripe.
I think he was just doing a lot of stuff in the 2000s and leather jackets and red. But it's funny because the whole joke was that he was 80s. His aerial broke in 1988, so he hadn't gotten any – it's like
– any news.
It's like, what about newspapers?
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty fucked.
What about newspapers? And they were bandits, but like they did the violence of, the cartels.
Yeah. Yeah. What the fuck?
That was the strangest thing was it was like, oh, no, there's bandits. And it's like, oh, yeah. So this is kind of an ironic idea of what an American is. And it was like, I'm going to cut off his head. It's like, oh, so, but you're layering some cartel violence.
Yeah, exactly. Fucking weird.
Oh, my goodness gracious me. Yeah, it was fascinating, fascinating. Look, network comedy is not really my bag.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's hard. because I don't want to rag on everything.
But you do.
But I do. No, look, I don't. This did not inspire me to continue watching My Name is Earl. If anything, it inspired me to watch Almost Famous again.
Yes.
And I wish John Leguizamo was in that film because I would really, really enjoy discussing that film. If anyone does want to watch My Name is Earl, you can do it now on Disney Plus,
mm-hmm.
on Star,
mm-hmm.
which is amazing.
Yeah, my God.
Oh, my God.
I remember when
they
Disney
might as well
Plus,
just call it Misha's channel.
When Disney Plus first came onto the scene, right, you know, and obviously, you know, Netflix is my daddy. Mm. But when Disney Plus came onto the scene, I was like, yeah, it's good, but it's very niche. Like, it's Disney. It's one brand, and Netflix is kind of
Did
trying to be
Did you have it? Did you get
brand.
It?
Yeah, and but I got it because I wanted to watch The Mandalorian, and I didn't. But we'll have to watch an episode of it soon.
Oh, that's so exciting.
But I was like, oh, yeah, it's pretty good, but it's limited, and the Disney brand is limited. And then I was like, they should buy Stan and then turn it into Hulu. And then what they did instead, they were just like, Star's a thing. It's a part of it. It's a part of it at Star, and here's every Fox movie ever.
Yeah.
I was like, that's why you spent $80 billion on Fox.
It's just so good. I watched What Lies Beneath.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant. Fucking brilliant. I watched Big Business, an excellent Bette Midler film. Love Bette Midler.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that of me?
Do you love Bette Midler? No, but it doesn't surprise me.
I love Bette Midler. I've watched, what else have I watched? I watched Hide and Seek. Not sexy, but a thriller. Have you seen?
No.
Robert De Niro, Dakota Fanning when she was young.
Oh, remember that. Yeah. Oh. I love a middling Robert De Niro thriller. Mm.
So if you're thinking of watching My Name is Earl, maybe watch Hide and Seek instead.
Or go back and watch the first three seasons of Arrested Development again. Or watch.
I've never seen Arrested Development.
I know, but you didn't have it. It's good.
It's no. I think as someone who would now call herself a comedian, I think it's not good that I haven't watched Arrested Development. I've also never watched Broad City.
I haven't watched
30 Rock.
Okay, yeah.
I think this is a problem.
That was the other one I was going to say. Those are two, 30 Rock and Arrested Development are the two best examples of network television.
But I can't understand what that means because instead of watching that, I watch shit reality television. Ask me anything about Jersey Shore.
Yeah, no. I watch shit reality television. But it is good to, you know, if you want to be a comedy writer, watch.
Why have I not watched those shows?
Just, I don't know. But I would recommend, if you want to be a comedy writer, it's probably a good
idea. Yeah, I think it's probably a good idea.
Just check them on. Have a watch. Arrested Development, first three seasons are just. So because you know how, and then we'll wrap this up. You know how with Arrested Development, no, you don't know. You know how with network TV, I would say a big criticism is like a dearth of jokes or like this, like it's quick. It's like they're like, well, we've got to cut to an ad break. We've only got 22 minutes.
Mm.
So what we're going to do is we're going to cut the joke down to not – it's like – I feel like often with – it's like, oh, that needed another line.
Mm.
That needed another beat. That needed, like, more.
Mm.
That joke – needed a little bit more to get me over the line.
Mm.
It was like, da, da, whereas it needed to be da, 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 da. Yes. You know what I mean? Yes, like, it's always like, yes. Da, da. It's like, okay, that's great, but cut some words. And then you cut the words, you lose the rhythm. It's like, and that feels like that often, like the network shows. Arrested Development was the, they were just like, right, we've got 22 minutes. Let's cram as much in as possible.
Yeah.
And it's also a great thing of the concept's good. The characters are phenomenal. There's like 9 characters and they're all amazing. And it's just like joke. Same with 30 Rock. 30 Rock is just joke.
I should really watch them.
I just think that all network shows really have going for them is like jokes.
Mm.
And those two shows just have jokes. Where My Name is Earl could have done with a few.
Okay.
Put it on with a few more jokes.
Okay.
But I'm not going to say that because I'm trying to be positive. That's my angle.
I understand. Do you remember the show Ally McBeal?
Yeah. Remember they did the dancing baby?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that show being funny.
You liked it?
Like in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
Anyway, how many Leguistamos?
I just want to say one thing.
Yep.
The guy in the trailer next door. So you know how the whole plot was Jamie Presley, who's really good.
Yes.
Really, really good.
Oh, I love her. Not Kristen Chenoweth, who also kind of took her, like...
Yeah, but, like, her and Margot Robbie are, like, the same.
I think that Jamie's a little bit older.
Yes, yeah, no, that's exactly it. Like, by 10, there's 10 years probably there.
Yeah.
But, like, but it's funny because Jamie Presley came up in, like, the 2000s, mm-hmm. and it was like, oh, she's just about it. You know, like, I think people were very dismissive of her, and I was watching, I'm like, she's as good as Margot Robbie.
Yeah.
She's really good.
Very funny.
But you know how the whole plot was there was a trailer next to their trailer, and the guy that doing the poo next door is in House of Cards heaps.
What?
He's in, I wish I'd looked him up. Why don't you talk about your Leguistamo while I quickly look up who this guy was?
So it's John doing a bit of comedy. He does a funny dance. He wears a red jacket. Love that.
Mm-hmm.
If I didn't know who John Leguizamo was and I watched this episode of My Name is Earl, I don't think I would then go, who is that guy? And look into it, right? Yeah. So not my favourite Johnny performance. It has not inspired me to continue watching My Name is Earl. So, I mean, in that sense, the actor didn't serve the text, but also probably the best actor of the episode as per most things he's in. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give this a solid 2 Leguistamos because it didn't really – I think this was genuinely maybe a week on set but a very loose week, and he just happened to be able to – he was able to do it 9 to 5.
He fitted in.
Yeah, he fitted in. He found a week to do it. He had a bit of spare time. Good quality Dad Guizamo, do we reckon? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dad Guizamo. So yeah, 2 Leguistamos from me.
Yeah, great.
I'm not ragging on the show that much. I think of the time, sure, it was kind of cute. Good kind.
I never loved it. It was never for me.
Yeah, I just remember seeing the ads on the television and going, nah, I can skip that one.
Yeah, I remember being excited because I love Kevin Smith, and then I watched 2 or 3 eps, and I was like, oh, not for me. Yeah, I thought this was for me.
What's your Leguistamos, and who is this man?
So his name, this is Jimmy Simpson, and he would be great. He's been in some really, he's just this guy.
Oh yeah,
and he was in Date Night. He was in Silk Road. I thought he was in more than that. Anyway, Westworld,
House of Cards.
Yeah. Anyway, thought that was pretty cool. Having just watched John Leguizamo and I think one of his best comedic performances in Sisters, thought it was fun. I thought it would have been a fun little gig for him to do. I love someone doing, like, you know, the awkwardness of someone inserting themselves into, like, other people's shows is always interesting. Like, I reckon being a guest on another show would be tough.
Mm.
I thought he did a solid job, but, you know, what is a Leguistamo?
Really?
What is a Leguistamo? And I think really at its core, it's how Leguizamo-y it was.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing some good Leguizamo stuff.
Quality Leguizamo stuff.
But it was a casting.
Yep.
They didn't write that thinking of Leguizamo. I think they wrote the part and then they thought who would be good, and I think the casting director was like, I could see if Leguizamo's interested, and they'd be like, oh, yeah, he'd be great.
Mm.
That's what it felt like. Okay. It felt like, what about John Leguizamo? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think we've got budget for, like, guest actors.
I'd be willing to bet that when we post this on Instagram, the picture saying new episode or whatever, and John sees it, he's going to be like, oh, I remember that, but he hasn't thought of it in years. Yeah.
I think they could have had anyone else play that part.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a Mexican. And anyone could have played that part and they would have done a fine job.
Yeah.
He did a good job, but you know what I want to see?
What?
I want to see My Name is John Leguizamo.
Oh, My Name is Legs.
My Name is Johnny Legs.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine? Let's hope that show comes out in 3 years.
Though, I think so there's quite a few pilots, and maybe season ones of that that we have to get through.
Yeah.
I think they've had a crack at that. Anyway, he wasn't in a heap. 2.5. 2.5 Leguistamos.
Beautiful.
Mish,
yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Zach. And people, listening, please let me know about what the fuck unschooling is, because I don't want to look it up, but I like reading your DMs. So thank you so much.
Oh, yes. And to our listeners, mine and Mish's comedy festival show, Mish and Zach kicking each other in the face for an hour has sold out, so you can't buy any tickets.
Whoopsie. But I will say this, actually, genuine question. Do you think that Zach and I should do live podcasts from time to time at festivals?
Yeah. Are you asking me?
I'm asking the listeners.
Yeah.
I think it'd be fun.
Yeah, it's like the screenings.
We didn't do it for my comedy festival, for Melbourne International Comedy Festival. But maybe sometime in the future, that's something we could look into, if that's something you're interested in. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.